started to think about what was the world missing and why was this thing taking off? And what we realized at that time, but more so over the last, you know, now 7 years, is that the world was just missing conversational, engaging business news. And so we started off with a daily email newsletter. We went full time when I graduated from Michigan. Alex spent a little time working at Morgan Stanley. 2017, we go full time. 2018 was a big year for us. We went from 100,000 to 1 million subscribers.
You're listening to the Next Generation Podcast, weekly interviews with the most interesting and successful 20-somethings out there.
What's up? I'm Austin Reif, CEO of Morning Brew, and welcome to the Next Generation Podcast.
Austin, I'm excited to have you on here, man. It has been a long time coming. We got a chance to go and catch up in New York a couple weeks back, and I feel like if we just had a mic for that conversation alone, that would make for a really interesting podcast. And so I basically, like, for the most part, want to go and re-record some of what we kind of chatted about there. But for the few people who are either not subscribed to the Morning Brew or have not heard of y'all, you know, I don't want to go ahead and dive into your entire story because you've probably done that on a million of podcasts at this point. But do you want to maybe give people like a 30 to 60 second overview on what the Morning Brew is and where you guys are at today by size or how many people you guys hired?
Yeah, absolutely. So in 2015, I met a guy by the name of Alex Lieberman, who is now my co-founder. He was writing at the time what was a PDF attachment. We were both at the University of Michigan in the business school. And so when people say newsletters, it didn't start off as an email newsletter, you know, but hey, it started off as a PDF attachment about the markets. But what was interesting about that PDF is there was no way to sign up, no landing page, there was no growth mechanism. It wasn't a business. It was just something Alex, my co-founder, was doing for his friends. But it took off by word of mouth. So people were emailing Alex saying, hey, I was looking over, you know, person X's shoulders. Can you get me signed up to this thing? And after about 300 people, Alex took a step back and he brought me on as well. And we started to think about what was the world missing and why was this thing taking off? And what we realized at that time, but more so over the last, you know, now 7 years, is that the world was just missing conversational, engaging business news. And so we started off with a daily email newsletter. We went full time when I graduated from Michigan. Alex spent a little time working at Morgan Stanley. 2017, we go full time. 2018 was a big year for us. We went from 100,000 to 1 million subscribers. And fast forward to today, 250 person company. We'll do about $80 million of revenue this year, highly profitable, you know, 20 to 25% EBITDA margins. And we're more than just a newsletter company. So we have newsletters in different verticals, retail, marketing. Of course, we have the daily, which has over 4 million subscribers, but we're starting to really expand into multimedia content focused on creator-driven content in money, right? So personal finance, investing, et cetera, and also work life. So productivity, career development, so on and so forth. So that's a hopefully 60 to 90 second version of where we are.
That's a great, great summary. I'm very, very curious on that time frame when we guys went from 100,000 to 1 million subscribers. Was that just everyone kind of sitting down and grinding, or was it kind of a big inflection point where you're like, hey, we need to scale this, you know, we're going to take it to the next level?
We went full-time in 2017, summer 2017. And for the first 6 months, we kind of had to figure out what the heck we were doing. Like, you know, you guys get this because you're entrepreneurs, but I came from a school where, you know, we were really taught what to do. And so we were, you know, it was like, oh, you take this test, you know, go to this class. So I drive my car to New York from Michigan. I sit down, I'm like, what do I do today? Like, it's Monday. And so it took us like 6 months to kind of figure out, what's a schedule look like? What do we do? How do we plan things? How do we hire people? And so, you know, we had four or five, maybe six people to start 2018. And then we got hyper-focused. We, as opposed to most other media companies at the time who raised a ton of venture, we were lucky, really, really fortunate about the fact that it wasn't, we didn't raise that much venture. Actually, we raised no venture. We raised a family and friends round. And from there, we just got hyper-focused. We're going to grow that newsletter via the very best email growth tactics, and we're going to monetize that email to fuel back into growth. And we just took every single penny we made and put it back into growth with this belief that we don't know what scale means. If we can get to some scale, we can make a ton of money. And that's what I'm happy to speak more about the growth tactics specifically that we use. I think there's some interesting ones, but it was really just focus, and then we hit some home runs.
Let's actually dive into that for a second, man, because I feel like as soon as you say that, people are going to start thinking in their mind, like, okay, we gotta revisit that topic, and I don't want to lose that. What did you guys do to essentially go from 100,000 to 1 million in 1 year?
Yeah, and so maybe even to go from I don't know, maybe 1,000 to 10,000. I'm assuming it was probably significantly different on each one of those kind of segments.
Yeah. So yeah, let's go through all of them. So the first, let's say 1,000 were, you know, family, friends, like word of mouth in Michigan. Then I think it was actually the first 500. Then we say, we're going to some time, we're going to make a logo. We paid some student $200 to make a logo. We're going to make this thing an email newsletter that you can sign up. There's a landing page. And again, this is middle of 2015, let's say, beginning of 2015, actually, March when we started sending out the actual inline newsletter. And the way we got from 500 to, let's say, 10,000 is Alex and I went to every single Econ 101, Accounting 101, Marketing 101 professor. And we said, hey, we want to educate the students at the University of Michigan about the business world. There's a stack of Wall Street journals every morning when I get to Michigan, and I get to Ross, the business school, and there's that same stack of newspapers every day when I leave. No one's reading the business news, the business world. Give me 5 minutes of your time and I'm going to pitch it. And that's what we did. These lectures were 500-600 people. And so we go to these lectures and we pitch Morning Brew. First time we did it, I was nervous as heck. I pitched it and we went from like 600 to like 603 students. I was like, this is going to be a lot harder than I thought. And what we realized there was no one's really paying attention enough to like go to Morning Brew. It was morningbrewdaily.com, by the way. We bought Morning Brew for like $5,000. So morningbrewdaily.com, put their email in. So what we said was, okay, this is working, but let's pass around a piece of paper and basically like kind of force people to put their email down. Right? Like I stared them down.
I'm not two-factor authentication.
Yeah. No, there's no two-factor authentication.
Double opt-in.
At the time, there was none of that. And so I just stared over people's shoulders until they wrote their email down. And then we were starting to get chunks of 400-500 emails at a time. And that was like, you know, when you're a 600-person newsletter, you have 500 emails. You have 600 to 1,000.
That's big.
To 1,500, to 2,000. And that's how we got to like 10 or 15,000. And then we said, whoa, this actually works. What if we get all our friends, other college campuses, do the same thing? We went from 500 to, I don't know, 7,000, 10,000. So I got my friend at Penn State, our friend, and we got readers at Notre Dame and Penn. And next thing you know, like we're running this scale ambassador program and we're getting 10, 15, 20,000 students a semester.
And Austin, to cut you off there for a second. So like you guys are scaling up, it honestly kind of almost feels like it's like the Facebook approach, right? Campus to campus and like jumping around that way. When you were doing this, were your friends at the time essentially thinking like, okay, like these guys have a newsletter, it's a hobby. And like, were you guys actually making money at the time or even thinking about that? Or is it all like how many people and how many eyeballs can we go and get on this newsletter every single morning?
Yeah, so we're talking spring semester 2016, right? So going into my sophomore year and also all of my junior year. No, people thought we were kind of crazy. People were like, oh, like it's this cool newsletter thing. It's cute. It's growing. Went from 10,000 to 12,000 subscribers this week. That's awesome. But, and by the way, we thought that too. Like until my internship junior year, I would never have thought about going full time. So no, everyone thought it was like a cute little fun side project.
And then you just kept going in terms of, I don't know, because I feel like what would happen is you do the internship, you realize, I think you have an investment banking was your original route, right?
Yeah. So I went to banking after my junior year. I'd say we were at, you know, the newsletters, I forget the timeline, but we were at like 40, 50,000 subscribers. And we probably grew from like, let's say 40 to 60 summer of 2016, right? Or 30 to 50, something like it's pretty meaningful, right? And I walked into the internship again, like it's a boutique investor, a great bank, by the way, like a really great bank, but it wasn't for me. And I walk in and again, I go there and everyone's like, what is this like silly little side project you're doing? Do you realize you're walking into this cutthroat environment? You don't have time for side projects. But I walked out and everyone was reading the newsletter, right? And not just the college students. Like at the time, like that was a big inflection point, like a big aha moment, if you will, was that we thought the newsletter was for college kids. But then I started seeing like my VP was 32, 33, 34 reading the newsletter. We're like, wait a minute. We thought this was just for college students, but actually it's for everyone. Like, and all of a sudden the TAM in our mind went from this thing that people churn out every couple of years to wait. Like everyone could read this. That's really interesting. And that was, I was like, oh wow, I don't like this job. I can always come back here if it doesn't work. More people are reading this than I ever thought. We knew the cost structure, right? We knew how profitable this thing could be. at not that much further than where we were. We're like, worst case scenario, it's a great cash flowing business. And then like, I'll come back here with a business that makes, I don't know, 50, 100, 200 grand a year. And we, you know, can do whatever we wanted. So that was one of the reasons we did it, was because it was like a, it was too obvious not to, it was a hard decision, but to make money off it was seemed pretty easy.
What size were you guys when you guys began actively seeking sponsors and partnership opportunities and all of that?
Yeah, so we really started doing sponsorships in 2017, right? And we were probably 50, 60, 70,000. And the sponsorships really ramped up in 2018. We went from 100,000 to a million. So summer of 2017, let's say through beginning of 2018, is when we went from 50 to 100,000. And the way we're getting sponsorships was no different than the way we're getting getting people signed up. We went on LinkedIn. This is like the big direct-to-consumer, let's call it a bubble, right? Where every company was raising a ton of capital. And the mistake investors made, which was to our benefit, was investors said, hey, mattress company X, you've gotten to $10 million of revenue. I'm going to give you $100 million and go acquire the next million customers for that same $20. And Facebook got competitive. Google got competitive. Not everyone needed a mattress, right? Or not, yeah, they exhausted early adopters. LTVs weren't great. It's not just mattresses. It's all these physical products ended up being nice businesses, just not really, for the most part, venture businesses. And so we saw these companies raising money, and we DM'd the head of growth of every single direct consumer company. Like, we had a spreadsheet. My co-founder, Alex, just was an absolute, you know, savage on LinkedIn every single day DMing heads of growth. Hey, like, how much do you, we'll put you in the newsletter tomorrow. How much do you want? Oh, 400 bucks. Great. But because again, it wasn't about making millions of dollars. It was about, okay, the $400 we get from direct to consumer X tomorrow is 400 more dollars we can put into growth. And we know we can get 300 subscribers from those $400. And we were a little ahead of the curve there in terms of thinking about media the same way these direct to consumer companies thought about mattresses or eyeglasses.
Right now, there's like a really big movement in like this indie hacker community, essentially, that talks all about how like you want a profitable lifestyle business, something that pays you. You can like work when you want to work, don't work when you want to work, whatever. And when we were chatting the other week, you basically mentioned that there was some kind of inflection point where you guys are sitting around, you're growing, you know, you can grow 20, 30, 40% every single year, or like 50% in those early couple of years, and just make really good salaries for yourselves and like not stress out, not have a huge team or anything like that. And you said, actually, we decided to go the other way. We decided to go and scale up, not stay small, and like really go and see how big we can take this. And I think something that's kind of stuck with me from that meeting is you said, like, in a lot of ways, that decision actually became substantially easier, made everything much easier for you guys, both from a hiring standpoint, from like a sales standpoint, and all of that. Can you kind of elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah. So, you know, end of 2018, we had like a, I don't know, 12, 15 person team. And we went from, oh, cute little side project to, wow, really profitable singular product. You're not going to get the best and brightest people to come work on a singular product, right? And so we had this inflection point where it was, do we stick to one product and, you know, 4-hour work week, to use a Tim Ferriss reference, or hire a team and, you know, and just like run that and do other things, or do we try to take it to the next level? And we didn't, by the way, go out and raise venture funding, but we did think about, like, let's take a risk and let's try to grow it and let's see if we can 10x. I always like to think, like, is there still 10x growth from here? And I thought there was definitely 10x growth. And so we hired a team. And the reason it got easier is once we expanded our vision from, hey, we're building a newsletter, to like, oh no, we're building this consumer business. You know, people say this a lot, and I think it's true, is smart people, ambitious people are attracted to big ideas and bigger businesses, right? And so, yeah, I think a little bit gets lost in like the indie hacking versus venture and whatever. I think the polars always stand out there, but I think the answer is nuance, right? Do you have a venture business? If you do, I would probably go raise venture funding. Do you not have a venture business? I probably wouldn't go raise venture funding. I think where the problem really is where you're in the middle, where you're either trying to run a venture business, but you indie hack it, or this is way more common, you have a really nice business, but you try to raise a bunch of venture and that ruins the thing. And so I think we wanted to grow, but we knew we weren't a venture business. And so we didn't go out and raise $20 million of venture, but we did expand the purview of what we were doing.
You said you raised a little bit of friends and family money. Did that happen at that inflection point when you decided that you did want to kind of scale it out, or did that kind of come beforehand?
No, that was before we went full time. So in 2016, 2017, we raised $750,000 on a convertible note. And like, that was the best of all worlds, right? We call it family and friends. It wasn't really family or friends. It was through the network we'd built at Michigan. It gave us enough money to hire a few people. It constrained us a ton though, in terms of we still had to get really, really good at those things. But the business was profitable enough that we actually didn't have to, we could scale from 10 to 20 or 10 to 30 people, make no more revenue and still be okay. So we kind of were able to grow without having to raise $5 or $10 million of venture funding.
And then when you decided that, hey, we are going to go kick this thing out of the water, going to go from that 100,000 to, you know, million person list, what were some of the tips and tricks you guys did there? Was it working on maybe more of the paid acquisition side and ads? Because now you're making money and you can spend money, or what did that transition look like there?
Yeah, so I think there were three things, right? One started when we were at like 20, 30,000 subscribers was the referral program, right? We did not originate referral programs. We didn't even originate referral programs and newsletters, but I would say we were best in class. Going back to like those early WeWork days, right? We would print out every email and visualize the email flow, and we'd A/B test every email 100 different ways to optimize that. And so we felt really, really good about our referral program, and we were doing giveaways, referral program. We were just humming. The business was just absolutely, that referral program was humming, which made us more confident to spend money on growth marketing, because even if it didn't back out the ROI we wanted, we have the referral program to make up for some of that. So, you know, we wanted 300 subscribers from this ad. We only got 100. Okay, well, maybe those 100 people can bring 200 more to get us there. So that was like the comfort blanket we had that we built over a year and a half to 2 years and A/B tested at a time. And there were two different paid methods that were big inflection points, right? One was a discovery we had as a team, which was there are people. So one thing differently that we did than most other newsletter businesses is most people were just tracking like cost of acquisition, right? $4 to acquire a subscriber. We were tracking you much deeper into the funnel though. We were tracking you 10, 15, 20 days and seeing how you engaged. And we found out that at least for Morning Brew, if you engage with us for the first 4, 6, 10 days, it correlated with long-term success. And so we built this internal high quality metric of if you open the newsletter 5 out of your first 10 days. And what we noticed is that engagement rate varied drastically by different source of acquisition. And what we noticed, the highest quality source was when we ran ads. It makes sense, right? There were people out there who were just newsletter people. And even if we ran an ad in a science newsletter with 100,000 subscribers, not everyone cares about business, but the people who do are also newsletter people. And so we ran ads in every single email newsletter you could possibly find. I mean, in fact, we got to the point where we ran out of newsletters to run ads in. And so we were finding people with big email newsletters, helping them scale their ad business for them in exchange for running ads in their newsletters. Like that's how successful it was. So that was the second thing. So referral program, that. And the last thing, we had a friend of a friend who went to the Facebook's F8 conference, right? This is 2018. Instagram stories is taking off. Instagram stories is eating Snapchat's lunch, and they hadn't monetized them yet. And we heard Instagram stories ads summer 2018, or I could have the timeline wrong, whatever. And we were ready, right? And at the time, it wasn't like ads are now where everything's opt out. It was opt in, right? You had to opt in because the sizing was different. And so we were like refreshing every day. And the first day we saw it, we put up an ad, and I can speak to the ad creative in a second because I think it was really an interesting ad creative. But we were acquiring customers for like subscribers like a penny that first day. And it was like, there's no drug in the world that gives you the high of being a 300,000 person newsletter, acquiring 10, 20, 30, you know, so there was days we were growing 10% in a day. It was crazy. That's absurd. And we didn't sleep for like 3 days straight.
I was going to say, I can probably imagine you guys just caffeine overload, just like pure watching the refresh numbers, just like go, go, go as the newsletter subscribers kick up. I was going to say, I was just over in New York at like some e-commerce dinner the other night and heard about a new tactic, like just to kind of speak on the concept of like being early and like the benefits that can have. where some e-commerce companies are no longer pitching their product as like, let me go and sell this product. Now these e-commerce companies are pitching it as, do you want to be a brand ambassador for us? What that means is you fill out this form, we give you 20% off the product, and then you post about it. And I've heard of companies absolutely cleaning up doing this new strategy, because all it is now organic social that's like kind of creating like this little viral loop. They were going to give you a 20% off discount code anyway, but now they're just, rather than slapping the word customer on it, now you're an ambassador. And I feel like hearing these stories of people early to platforms or early to marketing techniques is always so interesting for me.
Yeah, I mean, that's where the real alpha is, right? Like, you know, the alpha is when the word spreads so quickly on Twitter, right? Marketing Twitter, whatever. You find opportunity on, and there's so few new platforms coming up, right? So when platforms grow, like every new platform, there's a new brand, right? Or new set of brands that grow. And so TikTok, right? I'm not a big TikTok. They launch an energy drink and they just like grew off the backs of TikTok and Twitch, right? And so
they did the YouTuber ones too, right? I think where they were, did like make all the joke prank videos and like they're handing them out and stuff. And like, do you want to bang?
They're great, right? And I don't know too much about them, but I see that when Snapchat first launched, I just saw that energy. And like, you know, that's just what happens, right? Every new platform, there's a new company that sponsors every influencer, and it's cheap at the time, because what does it cost to sponsor Charli D'Amelio? No one knows. And yeah, so you know, we were early to a couple of things. And in a subscription business, right? People don't think about Morning Brew as a subscription business because it's free, but it is a subscription business. Acquiring customers, you know, if you have like a hack as a non-subscription business, like cool, you made money. That's typically why I actually don't think consumer non-subscription businesses, you might make $50 million in a month, but how sustainable is that? What do you do with those customers? But yeah, I mean, there's always, that is all being first. It's always worth it to be first onto a platform.
I want to go and chat about the ad creative. You said you did something interesting there.
Yeah. So again, it's all just timed up perfectly, but going back to being focused, we spent almost, and this sounds crazy now, we didn't have a social media manager till like end of 2019, right? We were doing $20 million of revenue. We didn't have anyone covering our social accounts. Why? Because at the time, there was no way to make money off it. And when you run a bootstrap business, every dollar should be accounted for. And I was ruthless. I ran our financials till like beginning of 2020. Or no, end of 2019, I think. I can't, 2020. Right? Like I was in QuickBooks because every dollar I viewed it, every dollar was to be spent was like dollars that were not in our pockets. And we didn't have a social media manager. And so what we would do, and also going back to the referral program, we if you got 3 referrals, we'd send you Morning Brew stickers, right? Part of the program. We can dive into that if you want to. We didn't pay people to ship the stuff. We did it ourselves. Friday at like 2 or 3 o'clock, we'd like pour ourselves like 30 cups of beer and we'd assembly line and we'd pack stickers into envelopes. You know, so one person would pack, one person would lick the envelopes, one person would seal, one person slap the label in there. And we'd do that for hours and hours and hours on Friday afternoons. And we'd sit around and think about funny stuff to post on Instagram to grow our Instagram. Like that was our Friday afternoons, like the ultimate like early startup, whatever. And so anyway, someone thought of this hilarious idea. I actually know who it was. He hasn't worked in Morning Brew anymore, but it was one of our original writers between Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos. They were in the news for something. And again, we hadn't really seen too much of that time. And it just like went crazy viral for us, right? And now like it probably had like 6,000 likes on a page that had like 5,000 followers, right? So it hit the discovery page, which we had never really hit the discovery page before. And now that's like everything. It's all discovery page. And then we paired that ad up with the Instagram stories ad. So we said, what if instead of Elon Musk and Bezos making the joke, they talk about Morning Brew? And so that was the creative that was in like a penny, 2 pennies. And that we must have spent, I'd say we probably spent $10 million on that single image across social channels, maybe $5, $10 million. And then everyone copied it. Like literally everyone copied it. And then we had to change it because all you saw, every email newsletter were just text conversations.
That's incredible. Also, that goes to show too, like just from the e-commerce world, you always hear the expression that like one ad is all that you need and one piece of creative is all that you need in order to go and like really find the success. So I absolutely love that story. I think I want to take this conversation a slightly different route, you know, because I think there's a lot of stuff that you're thinking about now and working on now that isn't like, obviously the CEO of Morning Brew, this is your number one priority, but you have a lot of really original thoughts in terms of like how you want to go and allocate your time, your capital, all of that kind of stuff, right? And we can kind of fast forward the story almost from the days that you guys were licking envelopes and just filling them with stickers to end of 2020. I think you guys sold to Business Insider for what was a reported valuation of $75 million, right? Looking back on that now, it's, I guess, a year and a half later at this point. I'm sure it probably feels maybe a lot longer, like it was just yesterday. But was selling the business at that point the right move, knowing what you know today, at least for you?
Yeah, so it's funny, right? 2021 comes around, it's like this crazy bull market and things are, you know, and they're like tokens and coins and, you know, shit like that. And I'm getting texts from like friends and people like, you idiot, like you sold at the bottom, like whatever. But no, I think, and now everyone's like, oh, never mind. Like you're a genius, you know, like, and who knows, right? Do I think we could have sold the money? Do I think it was like sold the company for more money in 2021? Yes, I will never know for a fact. My guess is we probably could have. Do I think we would have? I don't know, right? If we didn't sell any of the business, what I know for a fact is the company wouldn't have grown as fast, right? And here's why, right? Like the transaction, what it did more than anything is, of course, like it gave, you know, it gave us a risk tolerance we didn't already have, both personally and as a business, right? And so it allowed us to grow the business. So we'd own the company for sure at this point, but we wouldn't have taken the risks we took because we had the backing of a $15 billion company. And so net, like, yes, I think selling a stake in the business was the right decision, allowed us to grow. And we want to keep growing, right? You know, we sold the company, obviously it's what it sold for is out there, it's reported, but you know, I think we're probably worth 3 to 4 times that. My goal is to build a $1 billion company. And I think we're very much on the path there. Maybe I would say we're probably 25% of the way there. So I think we have like 4X more to go to build a $1 billion company, which sounds crazy. But it's 4X. It's not that crazy.
So you have no doubt in your mind whether it might not be that 10X opportunity, but there's still that 5X growth left. And is that going to come from still kind of the email route, or is it more, you know, media? You're doing some interesting stuff with, you know, doing the commerce. You had like the Excel mouse pad and other, you know, things around that, or where do you actually kind of see some of that growth coming into play?
Yeah, I mean, just to break it down pretty simplistic, right? Let's talk about, I know this is crazy to speak about in this world, but let's talk about profit, right? A crazy concept called profit.
The dirty P word.
I know. And let's say like the average company, and again, I'm just picking random numbers, trades is worth 10 times profits, right? Could be more, could be less. Let's use 10 times profits, right? Digital media company, high margin. So if you want to be a $1 billion company, do $100 million of profit, right? All right, well, we can back into it. You know, we're an $80 million company, 20%, 25% margins. And so, you know, like that's kind of like where that math comes from. Now, where is the growth going to come from? Let me explain the business in 3 different sections. I think that will help, right? We have the daily email newsletter brings in the at least the plurality, the majority of the revenue, the daily newsletter. Then we have the B2B business, right? And the B2B business is retail. We have a retail brew, marketing brew, HR. We launched IT, we're launching CFO, we're launching healthcare. Each one of these is a publication on its own. That's not just a newsletter. Newsletters, virtual events, in-person conferences, small dinners, job boards we're launching. We're launching long-form content. We already have long-form content. So each one of these I view as like a little mini business that I think can be hopefully 8-figure businesses themselves, right? And so daily newsletters, part one. This B2B business is part two, where we can keep on launching verticals. They're newsletter centric, but they're not only newsletters. The conference business could be big. And the third part is the multimedia part. And so again, daily newsletter, B2B, and of course we have other newsletters. But this third part is our multimedia business. It's the newest part. Let's call it like the venture capital bet at Morning Brew. And the way we're doing that is we're going creator first, right? And so we're launching creators. They're gonna speak to, or we're bringing creators onto the platform. They're going to speak to specific areas, investing, personal finance, like I said before. And then those people, we monetize those people via ads, via commerce, like Excel Dictionary. She sells Excel mouse pads. We sell like $50,000 worth at this point. And then educational products. And so the growth is going to come from all of those things. The dollar growth, right, is of course going to come from the bigger ones, right? You know, you $50 million grows 10%, that's $5 million. But the percent growth is going to come from some of the newer ones. And so I do think those three things, the daily newsletter, the B2B business, and then the multimedia business with the other revenue streams can be a, you know, $250 to $500 million revenue business.
That's so smart. I also think that as I'm kind of going through your website right now too, like I believe not too long ago, maybe it was, and I just don't check the morningbrew.com as or morningbrew.com as often as I should. It was like just a landing page, and like the only CTA was sign up, give us your email, and that's it. And now you guys, like just from looking at the navigation bar right now, you guys have everything from like digital products to sign up for these four different email newsletters, these podcasts. We've got these, like you guys have crossword puzzles and quizzes and crypto crash courses and everything. So like, it's very clear that you guys are going for an abundant, like very cross-functional strategy. And I want to dive into that a little bit more after this. And especially with like how you guys are using content to kind of power the commerce side and vice versa. One question though, that I personally always like to ask, and if you're comfortable sharing it, you know, I would love to hear it. If not, we can kind of move on to the next thing, is like when Gio and I sold our company back in like the beginning of 2020, which admittedly significantly less than what you sold your company for, we went out and just did like probably the laziest thing possible, which is like take both of our ex-girlfriends out to like dollar dumpling night at like a local Chinese place right by campus. And then we also went and I think like a month or two later, bought new iPads, I think it was. So like basically just like the tackiest, like least flashy thing we could possibly imagine. And then I would say, honestly, because the market all tanked right after we sold it, like I put most of my money either like in crypto or stocks or something like that at the time. So like got very, very lucky there. When you sold your company, was there like something that you did that was like, this feels good, I just want to celebrate in the moment? And then, you know, as the flare of that maybe falls off a little bit and you're kind of like returning to normalcy, how are you thinking about allocating some of the capital that you made from the sale and like investing in different areas?
Yeah. So everyone asks me like, did you make some splurge purchase? Did you buy a car? Really? No. Yeah. I might go on like a nicer vacation now and then, although not with COVID, but like my spend really actually hasn't gone up that much other than like living expenses, right? Like where I live. In terms of how I invest my money, it's pretty boring, honestly. I still have, you know, a lot of incentive for Morning Brew to succeed financially. So I kind of view that as like my real risk asset, right? Like that is where the majority, I would say like the majority of my net worth is still in Morning Brew. And I have a lot of money in like the stock market, right? Just like in, you know, like the S&P and QQQ or, you know, small cap stuff. I have a bunch of stuff in real estate, right? Some diversified in real estate. And then I did put like 6% of the deal proceeds into crypto. You know, I bought some Bitcoins and Ethereum, but nothing crazy, right? Like I honestly, I really don't have the time right now to think too much about like what's next. And I do some early stage venture investing. But I think for the most part, like unless you're really strategic, you're best off putting your money into the market and just letting it sit there for 50 years. So yeah, nothing too crazy, honestly.
I was just going to quickly say as well, like I think one thing that people a little bit on the like older side think about versus like people who are like their young 20s first getting started is I think my generation got super fucked up because they see people making these absolutely astronomical returns on almost nothing invested. And in their mind, they think investing is the vehicle to go and get rich. Whereas I would probably argue that it's more of the other way of kind of what you're saying, where like Morning Brew is like your I don't know if you said it this way, but like your risk asset, right? Like it's probably the most volatile, but as a factor of that, you can also get the most return there. And then you can go and invest it and let it compound in maybe a more slow and boring way. One person that I personally follow that I like a lot of his content is Alex Hormozi. And he talks all about how like, you know, he built these big service businesses, like I think it was like Jim Lord, and now he invests in a bunch of other service businesses and like buys them. And he used those as like his cash flow assets, right? I think he got to the point where he was making over $1 million per month annually. And then he says when it comes to an investment strategy, all he does is he puts it in the S&P 500, takes out a loan against that for living. And then he also goes and invests the rest into real estate that he can go and depreciate quickly to try to offset some taxes, but like nothing flashier than that. And I feel like that's something that more people, like I wish that were younger, could think about, because you can still grow wealth crazy fast through a business, right? You started Morning Brew 2015, it's 7 years later now, right? Like it's a pretty dramatic jump. But I think a lot of people hear all of these stories around like Dogecoin and Shiba Inu or whatever, like those kind of coins, and just totally take a different approach to it.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to screw around with like 0.5 or one, or if you're really crazy, like 5% of your net worth and that stuff, like go ahead, that's fine. But what I think about is there's like the, you know, you take the majority of the money you make and you put it in investments, right? And, you know, can you make, and the stock market grows, what, like 8% a year, right? That's like the number they give. If your money grew 13 or 14% a year over 20 years, that would be a massive, massive difference. The problem is in trying to go from 8 to 12 or 8 to 13 in those passive investments, right? Trying to invest in crypto and funds, everything like that. I think you're way more likely for your money to grow at 3%. I think personally, you're better off taking that money you'd put in Dogecoin or something else and trying to buy some self-storage or buy things and put that in, like, yes, it's an investment, don't get me wrong, but I don't think about that. I don't think about like the cash flowing businesses you own as investments. To me, like that's like you operating in a business, right? So are you guys investing in self-storage? Sure, but like to me, that's very different. That is, your goal at some point is to make it passive. But even when it's passive, like if you own the thing, it's still active, right? And so I think you're better off taking the 10,000, 20,000 you put in Dogecoin and, you know, try to buy an e-com business or try to launch something and do more of that. I think you're like, I always want my thought process going to the things I'm actively working on versus trying to outsmart the markets, because there are people who do this for a living every single day. And so I think you're going to outsmart the market by putting, you know, your 10K into Dogecoin versus doing something yourself is tough.
You're not going to beat the hedge fund, right? Trying to invest in the stock market. You might be able to beat the lawn care company on marketing and, you know, probably have a much more sustainable business there.
Absolutely. Exactly. I think you're right. And I think the question for that type of stuff is just like, what is the right sizing there, right? Like for me personally, just to be totally honest, right? If I bought a lawn care business for $100,000 and it spit off $10,000 a year, that's not worth my time. Like, you know, so to make a passive 10 grand a year, if I had to, or not passive, I had to manage it. For me personally, like that's not worth my time to manage a lawn care business. So how do you get leverage on your time and your money to buy something big enough? And I think that's like where I think people struggle is, how do you do something that can actually be meaningful enough, but you're not risking the house?
In the same line of allocating money, how do you allocate your time? How do you consume content? What projects are you working on? I'm assuming you probably spend most of your time on Morning Brew because that's your full-time job essentially. And as you mentioned, is your biggest kind of risk asset there. But how do you handle that with also, like, you know, I often find myself looking at significantly far too much content, right? The Morning Brew, but now you also have all these other websites. Everyone's trying to give you something. How do you kind of handle that from a, hey, I'm going to spend 20, 30 minutes reading the news and then that's it, versus, you know, getting bogged down with just consuming far too much stuff on the internet? And Twitter, as we all know, is an easy time suck there.
Yeah. So it's actually interesting. In 2017, 2018, I read every single newsletter, everything you could possibly read when it comes to news. Here's what I do read now. I read, of course, Morning Brew. I read industry news, so media news, right? And like some tech stuff, right? Very few select things, one, two writers. And then I read evergreen stuff. It could be written today, but it's evergreen. That's it. I don't read political news whatsoever. I get enough of that passing by on Twitter. But I really, given the time I have, which is limited, I don't read that much stuff that isn't evergreen, right? So daily business news, I think business news is important. Industry news, stuff in media or stuff in the tech world, and evergreen stuff, that's it. Which is a huge change from where I would read tech, I would read, you know, the future tech things, and I would read the politics things, and every top 10 things you need to read in the day, know in the day. And to be honest, like 99 don't need politics in their life every single day. I think they'd be much better off without political news.
Completely agree. I've got two back-to-back questions here now. The first one is, on the evergreen note, is there like a quick, like 3 to 5 hit list of like, whether it's an article or a book that you would recommend to anybody who wants to go and succeed in business or maybe even call it life?
Yeah. So I don't know. One thing that I struggle with is to understand how much of like, how much do you get from reading a business book? So I struggle there. I tend to think it's a lot, but I'll just give books I love, right? Actually, some of the books I love the most aren't business books. First, I did learn growth marketing through reading books, right? And so Justin Mayers wrote this great book. I can't remember what it's called. It might be called, I can't.
Kettle on Fire guy?
Yeah, yeah. He wrote a great growth book. There's another guy, I'm blanking on his name. He worked at Facebook. Morgan Brown, I believe is his name. Morgan Brown, growth book, Hacking Growth, right? So I learned, there is stuff you can have to learn through books. I read that. But I love reading like non-business stuff as well. A couple of great books I've read. There's two books that are similar. One's When Breath Becomes Air.
That's a right? good one.
Which is an incredible book. And there's another one, Not Fade Away, which is, again, an exceptional book. Just like helps you value life. Another book I loved is Cal Newport's.
Deep Work. Is he the Lululemon?
No, he's Deep Work. He wrote a book on deep work and succeeding, you know, focusing. I actually read that book every year. I'm Jewish. I read that book on Yom Kippur because I can't pay attention in shul. So I read Deep Work. I feel like it's like, you know, same principles as Yom Kippur for the Jews out there. But I love like amazing online writers, right? Who might talk about what's going on in the world, but contextualize it, right?
Tim Urban is hands down my favorite online writer. I think the tail end, and he's got like one or two other blog posts that I will frequently go and look back on. The tail end's all about like how you just don't realize how much time you actually have left in this world. And like, he like conceptualizes it in activity form. And then the other one that's really good is all about like something about like taming the mammoth or something along the lines of like why just nobody actually is thinking about you. So like, stop caring what other people think about you. It's super good. Also for anyone listening right now, the Justin Mayers book is called Traction.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought so. Oh, and speaking of traction, there's actually another book. If you're a young entrepreneur building a team, there's a book called Traction, not by Justin Mayers, by Gino.
You're talking about the EOS guy?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
That one's good. The whole series of books I thought was so helpful. Yeah. How do you set up teams and work with people?
Yeah. And so scale? That is the stuff, right? So like, you know, can you learn how to run your e-commerce business? You can learn tips and tricks, right? Can you learn about your industry? Maybe. But one thing you can learn is systems and processes, right? You are not the first person to run an e-commerce business. You are not the first person to run a self-storage business. And while there are things that are unique to your business, and what separates a decent operator from an excellent operator is understanding what's the 95% of stuff I can copy and what's the 5% of stuff I can be original on, or I need to be original on to differentiate my organization. But as a young founder in particular, with a team growing and everyone was older than I was, I struggled to get a grasp on the team in the early days, and Traction, I mean, it really did, like, it changed my life because I was able to say, hey, here's a system. We're going to abide by this system, right? And then I would hold people accountable to it. And if people were like, I was like, it's not me. I'm not saying this. It's the book. What the book says. Agree with what the book says. Give me it gave me confidence. Because I didn't have to say, hey, we're going to meet every week. I said, no, the book says we're going to meet every week. I didn't have to say, hey, we're going to do 90-minute offsites every quarter. It was the book. Now we've modified and we don't follow it nearly as much. But as a young founder who didn't really know what I was doing, who hadn't been around bigger companies, it was just really easy for me to say, hey, like, it's just the book. It's not me, man. So like, don't complain to me. Like, we're going to do this for a year and see how it works.
Yeah, it's like an easy authority appeal, right? It's like, hey, listen, like, if they're building a $1 billion company, like, we can try it. Like, you know, it's not my idea. Like, you don't have to blame me. That's smart. I want to ask a question that's kind of almost the inverse of exactly what we just asked, which is like, what we just asked is all about, like, what are you consuming? What are you reading? Like, what kind of news are you taking in, et cetera? When we spoke last, you had some really interesting points, and this can maybe be where we wrap up here, because I want to be respectful of your time. Around like using content as leverage, and how can you go and like use content, whether that's for like yourself or your company, to go and like make everything else in your life either easier, whether that's hiring or starting a company or growing a company, whatever. And you just basically have some interesting points. And like, even if it's just free form of like what your overall thoughts are, I'd love to kind of hear your take.
Yeah. I think we live in a very noisy world, and there's nothing more important than having the trust and a direct relationship to people. So starting a newsletter and, or just creating content can help you in anything you do, right? If you're a B2B SaaS company, it can help you connect to your users. If you own self-storage, it can help bring investors or help bring employees or help bring new business ideas where you can cross-sell or partner or help eventually buy other businesses, right? So whatever you want to do, creating a group of like-minded people who believe in you, trust in you, want to get involved with you is so important. And I think newsletters are the very best platform for that. You're not beholden to an algorithm. And so, you know, we could talk about specifics at some point, maybe on another one of these about, you know, we can go through examples, but just in general, no one's ever created content like, oh, I regret that, right? Now, it has to be good content that people engage in. But I think ultimately, like, look at like the people who have gone from a singular business to multi-businesses, right? How do they do it? They build an audience, right? Like Gary Vee, it's his audience that's brought relationships, which now he can expand to 100 different businesses. You know, and people criticize these people, and I'm not advocating for any of these people, but the Grant Cardones of the world or the Tai Lopez's, right? In fact, one of the, whether you respect him because they built big businesses and they've done it because of content, or maybe even more so, if you don't respect those people like that, right? These internet people, like, you know, make like clickbaity ads like in front of Ferraris, you should at least respect their use of content because they've been able to do what they do because of content. So either way you look at it, they've leveraged content so many different ways. And so, you know, Cody Sanchez, someone else doing really great work with content, or Instagram content is really good. There's just so many people out there. So all this is to say, and I could go on this forever, no one's ever going to regret creating great content and engaging with, again, customers, investors, future employees, anyone else. It's really a great investment.
I would also say, kind of from the context of, like, I think you can go into the content with a very specific goal of, you know, I'm making content about X, Y, and Z because I'm going to sell this product down the road, and you have that path. But I feel like there's plenty of people that just start creating content with no real end goal on, you know, maybe what they're going to sell or whatever, but you do end up building that audience. And then, you know, you find your way kind of through it, and you get opportunities that A, you could not have predicted. So I think all that's to say, you know, I think you can get into making the content without even knowing your final goal down the road. And that's why we started the podcast. We had no real goal other than to meet super interesting people and see where it goes, right? And it kind of just falls in line from there. And then, yeah, I think you get a wild amount of opportunities from it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
Previously, if you're not creating content, if nobody knows who you are, you have to go and actively seek out every opportunity that you want. If you are creating content, more opportunity can just naturally come to you, which I think is pretty cool. But Austin, like I said, man, I want to be respectful of your time, and I want to kind of wrap things up here. If people want to go and check out you or the brew, where can they go and find y'all?
Yeah, Morning Brew is morningbrew.com. Pretty easy. And then I'm mostly on Twitter at Austin_Reef, R-I-E-F. Feel free to DM me if you have any thoughts, questions, or anything. Just let me know.
Thanks for coming on, Austin.
If you thought today's episode was awesome, we would love it if you would leave a 5-star review on the podcast, either on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. It makes a huge difference and lets us get cooler and cooler guests for future episodes.